Welcome to Your True North, a program that explores how values act as a compass, directing our lives and work. Inspiring guests tell how key events and influential figures shaped their values and how they've used those values to create a life rich in meaning, accomplishments, and personal satisfaction. Your True North is hosted by Cindy Camp. Are you seeking your true north? Then welcome.
Today, I have the privilege of talking with three guests who are all involved with a new national movement of Catholic sisters and spiritually diverse millennials called Nuns and Nuns. They are Sister Barbara Hansen, Katie Gordon, and Ellie Hutchison. Barbara Hansen has been a Dominican sister for 62 years. She served as an Aquinas College faculty member and administrator, a parish minister, TV producer, and an outreach coordinator. She's now retired. Ellie Hutchison serves as the co-facilitator of Sisters and Seekers, a local gathering of the National Nuns and Nuns Movement, where she partners with religiously diverse millennials and the Dominican Sisters of Grand Rapids to build intergenerational spiritual community. Katie Gordon is a graduate student at Harvard Divinity School. She's one of the national organizers of Nuns and Nuns. Katie is also working with the How We Gather team at the On Being podcast Impact Lab as an intern. It's a great pleasure to welcome all three of you here today. I want to start by setting the stage. I know you're all involved with the Nuns and Nuns Project, and I'd like to ask each of you to tell me a little bit about the organization and what drew you to become involved. And Katie, maybe I'll ask you to start because I think you were really there at the beginning.
Definitely, yeah. And thank you so much for the space for this conversation. It's a pleasure to get to share more about what Nuns and Nuns is and the spirit of the project. So Nuns and Nuns, the origin of it is between Catholic sisters, N-U-N-S nuns, and spiritually diverse millennials or unaffiliated millennials, which is N-O-N-E-S. And this label of nuns sort of comes from this understanding that increasing amounts of young people are identifying with none of the above in regards to religious affiliation or identity. And so people are sort of struggling with figuring out how they identify religiously or spiritually, and oftentimes, particularly millennials, are finding themselves maybe drawn to spiritual practices, but kind of turned away from institutions of religious traditions. And so that's sort of the phenomenon that's created in these so-called nuns. But really, their stories are so much more complex than not following anything of the above. And I am a so-called nun because I left the religious tradition I was raised in, but I was still really searching for community and connection, and that was how I ended up finding Catholic sisters when I was living in Grand Rapids. I was doing interfaith work, so I got to know them through the interfaith organizing that I was a part of, but I really quickly came to see that this very unexpected conversation partner in Catholic Sisters were actually like the exact people I was looking for in my spiritual life and in the searching that I was doing, because they both saw me for who I was and never asked me to believe anything more than I did, and really met me where I was in a way that still challenged me and still encouraged me to look inner, to my inner life.
Well, thank you.
And Well, and so the origin of Nuns and Nuns in Grand Rapids was really that mutual curiosity between the two groups. And then little did we know that at the same time, there was this national movement of Nuns and Nuns burgeoning from Harvard Divinity School and across the country, where there's a similar curiosity between these two groups. And the conversations have evolved over the last 2 years now.
And Sister Barbara, do you want to add some things about from your point of view as a right. Dominican sister?
Yes, and thank you, Cindy, for inviting us today. I got to know Katie when I was working at the Community Media Center at GRTV, and I was interviewing nonprofits, so when the Kauffman Institute was going to be doing something exciting, I'd frequently have Katie as my guest. And Katie and I kind of realized that we liked each other, so every once in a while we'd go out to coffee. And after Katie had attended the very first Nuns and Nuns gathering at Harvard in November of 2016, we probably had coffee maybe in January or something, and in the course of it, she said, there's this thing going on, and do you think that we might be able to invite some people and get started? And I was really excited about it, so she invited the millennials she knew, and I think I invited about 20 sisters at the beginning, and I don't know how many millennials Katie invited, but our mailing list or our email list is probably approaching 60 at this point. And we met for the first time on Palm Sunday of 2017 on a Sunday night, and it just was magic. That's all I can say. I think maybe at that first meeting we maybe had about 20 people. Normally we're between 12 and 15 probably. And almost always we're an equal number of sisters and millennials. I don't know how that happens. People are obviously free to come and go, and they don't all attend everyone. We meet every other Sunday night from 5:30 to 7. And I guess the fact, at least from the sister standpoint, the fact that on Sunday night we want to go to one more thing at 5:30 and we leave energized and excited, I think that's the gift of the Holy Spirit myself. I mean, normally I would not want to go out on Sunday night after everything else of that day. So it's just been a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I think the reason why sisters are interested in it is most of us, not all of us who attend, are retired, but most of us are. And so we're out of touch. It's more difficult to get in touch with millennials. We may have grandnieces and nephews, but, you know, and most of us have worked in ministries where we worked with young people. So that's a lack. We also are well-read, and I think we recognize that the culture is changing so much, and we wonder about it, and we wonder what it's like. And I think we frequently say to each other, how in the world do you grow up today? So this has really been a very, very blessed and exciting adventure for us.
It sounds like it's meeting a real need for both groups. I'm already thinking that I would love to get involved too. It sounds tremendous. And Ellie, I'm wondering from your point of view, if you want to tell us about your involvement with Nuns and Nuns.
Yeah, certainly. And thank you so much again for having us. I got involved through my friendship with Katie. So she was gathering us in Grand Rapids, fellow millennials who were very much seeking spiritual community, that desired to be in relationship with one another. But we all found ourselves outside of the institutional church. Many of us came from that background, but no longer felt at home or like we belonged in those spaces. And so Katie created this first Nuns and Nuns gathering in April of 2017, and I attended, and like Sister Barbara mentioned, it was just magic. The connections that were so unlikely yet so meaningful just really blew me away. So I've been a faithful attendee since that first gathering in 2017, and when Katie moved to Boston to attend Harvard, I took over as the co-facilitator with Sister Barbara to continue our community in Grand Rapids. So it's continued to be a space where I'm able to grow and to learn spiritually and religiously, to process current events. I think in the political and social moment we're in, a space to process, to engage in fruitful dialogue, to just sit in silence and mourn some of the tragedies that are taking place. It's been a really vital and life-giving space in my life personally, but also to be involved in the facilitation and to have the opportunity to bring people together to enter relationships, especially across these intergenerational or generational divides. We're increasingly segregated in so many different ways, but especially in terms of age. So for many of us, especially those who are not originally from Grand Rapids, who don't have family around here, we've been able to have elders in our lives once again, and it's been incredibly rich and rewarding.
And I'm wondering, I know I'm speaking with three women, but I'm wondering if this group is open to men as well, or is it really just a female organization?
We have had, I would say, over the months, three or four males drop in. Most of them were friends with other millennials, and they're welcome. And the men that choose to come are men that feel comfortable. to be in that kind of an environment, but it is a female environment for the most part.
Okay.
But I don't think the men have ever felt uncomfortable. Katie?
Yeah, one of the sort of values, the central values when we started gathering was to have a women-centered space, but not women-only space. Because I think in our spiritual lives or faith journeys, a lot of us who were young women were looking for elders that we could resonate with. And the story, particularly in the Catholic Church, that isn't centered on the altar on Sundays, but the sisters being leaders of the church in so many ways and really wanting to uplift their role in leadership. And so in the National Nuns and Nuns Movement, there are quite a few men involved in the organizing capacity, and even a few really started it together. But we do want to really celebrate women's leadership in spiritual practice in this space.
Well, that gives us a great understanding of your organization. And I wanted to ask each of you, because Your True North is a show that focuses on how we identify and use core values or guiding principles in our lives, and especially how we use those to determine career and other big life decisions. And I'm wondering if each of you can identify a story, an incident in life that really helped shape your sense of your values. Sister Barbara, if it's all right, I'll ask you to begin. If there's some story that stands out for you that really helped determine the path that you've walked in life.
Well, I grew up in a family business. My father and mother ran a gas station and a small grocery store, which ultimately became a larger grocery store. And I just saw my parents being so generous, being so helpful. Mom took first aid training so that whenever there was a tragedy, it was Mom that was called out to the farm accident or the fire. And frequently, if a young man from our community was in jail, it was my dad who would get permission to go and visit. And if the priest couldn't be present for a wake at night, it was Dad who led the funeral service awake at night. So, I mean, I saw parents who were exceedingly dedicated to service and very community-minded. My mom's the youngest of 10, and 8 of them lived within 3 miles of each other, so we had lots of family community also. So I would say that it's living in a very small community with the church was the center. I mean, it just was. And then our grocery store and gas station were the other center. So I think that's where my desire for community and my desire for service came from.
And Ellie, what about you?
Yeah, reflecting on my childhood, I think one important value that was highlighted in just how my family lived was independence. And I think there's many virtues of that. I had a lot of freedom to pursue my interests, to choose which college I wanted to go to, what I wanted to study, and I was very much uplifted by my parents in choosing the path that I desired. However, I also think I began to see the downsides of that, and especially in early middle school and high school, I started suffering with depression. And I think a lot of that was tied to the social isolation I felt. I grew up far away from family. Both of my parents had pursued their kind of own independent paths, which led us to live far away from family, living in the suburbs and kind of a physically disconnected space. I realized how much I value and need interdependence, and I think that is very much a value I carry with me today and strive to live and learn to be spiritually engaged, to do justice work, all from an interdependent and communal perspective. And I see so much of that impulse in me arise from my early years of feeling socially isolated, even within the context of a very loving family.
And Katie, what about you?
Well, I think back to when I was 14, and I was raised Catholic in my family, and we would go to church somewhat regularly, but not particularly committed. And when I was 14, I was going through the confirmation process, and I just started to question what was true and what I believed and what I was searching for, what I desired out of life. And so I started to struggle with the doctrine that I was being taught in the Catholic Church, and I remember being really nervous to tell my mom that, but I felt like I needed to just sort of confess, right, that I was struggling with it. And I told her, you know, I'm not sure if I believe in the church or in God, and I don't know what I believe. And she said, oh, that's okay. I don't know if I do either. And it was such a permission to be okay with questioning and wondering. You know, for us, it was sort of this family tradition that was being passed on from generation to generation. But then there was sort of in that opening between my mom and I in that conversation, I think, it kind of gave us permission as a family to explore what that meant. And so I think that that tradition of just wondering and being open to inquiry is something that I've very much lived into so far in my life.
That must have been really reassuring to have a parent who was okay with your doubt and your uncertainty. I don't think everybody experiences that in their own family. So that certainly must have helped you walk down the path that you've chosen. I want to stop for just a moment to reintroduce all three of you. You're listening to Your True North, and today I'm talking with Sister Barbara Hansen, Ellie Hutchison, and Katie Gordon, who are all involved with the Nuns and Nuns National Movement. We've been talking about your values and how they took shape when you were younger, and I'm wondering now at this stage of your life, if you would tell us about a core value and how you really put it into practice in the work that you do. Or Sister Barbara, I know you're still engaged, but maybe even, you know, as you think back over your career, could we start with you, Katie? You want to tell us about a value that you really live according to?
Yeah. I think that, you know, one of the values that comes to mind in all of the projects that I'm a part of, but particularly in Nuns and Nuns, is to really be co-creators together, to be a part of this co-creative process, to never do anything alone, sort of about the interdependence piece that Ellie was speaking to really do things collaboratively, cooperatively, and really I view it as a countercultural value to the kind of competitive zero-sum game that it feels like we're a part of in larger society where there are winners and losers. Or people go about things in a solo journey and do it alone. That I think the value I try to live into is to always be co-creating together, to bring in partners, and especially in just the creation of Nuns and Nuns, it would have never happened with just me. I needed Sister Barbara, and the vision that Sister Barbara and the other sisters brought to it made it what it is. And it really is Nuns and Nuns at its heart, a co-creation.
Sister Barbara, what about you? A value today that you would embrace and really put at the center of your life?
Well, I was the eldest child, and because we had a family business, had tremendous responsibility. And so in that process, I think I learned steadfastness and generosity. And I think that I'm still that way. I still carry that. If there's a job to do and I think I've got the gifts to pursue it, I will take it on and I will do it. And I'll see it through to the end. That can also be a fault, and I know that. And so can generosity be a fault, because you can give too much of oneself. But I think in religious life, we're taught to balance activity and contemplation. And so most of the time, I think I'm able to keep that in pretty good balance. And I saw both of those in my parents, so that was not difficult. And I certainly see it in our sisters. So living in a community of, at the time I entered, probably 600 women, you see a lot of examples of very virtuous life.
Thank you. And Ellie?
Yeah, as I mentioned, interdependence is a great value of mine, and it's a constant effort for me to keep that front and center. Our culture is very individualistic, and that's how I was trained to be. So I think it takes vigilance and intentionality to live in a way that is communal. Like Katie mentioned, to always be thinking about how you can bring in partners and how you can lean on the gifts of the people around you. But I very much feel it's how we're meant to live, and there's so much richness and meaning and purpose that's found when we enter into things together, whether that is learning and spiritual growth or community, community involvement and different social justice movements. We weren't created to do things alone or to be isolated from one another, and yet societally we often are in silos. And I feel that is very much connected to this work with nuns and nuns to create community, and especially for millennials who often feel socially isolated, who desire spiritual community often or are seeking and want a safe place to ask those questions they hold, yet don't feel at home in institutions. Where do they go? They can often just feel increased anxiety, depression, isolation, and struggling with different mental health issues. So I think this work in Nuns and Nuns is to create a more interdependent spirituality and a more interdependent place where we can come together in community.
And what each of you has said is very interesting in the sense, I think, that yes, many times young people, and really many of us, think of career achievement as something that's very personal. And you know, if I do well, it pushes me up the ladder in terms of promotions or rewards of some kind. And to have work that really is so communal, where succeeding involves others, it's quite countercultural, I think, in a lot of senses. So thank you. It's interesting to hear that theme from all three of you. I also want to just ask you a little bit about some of the things you've learned in life. I know it's often observed that suffering can be our best teacher. Have you had any experiences where you've really had to struggle with a value that you hold? And what happened or what you learned as a result of that? And I'll just throw that open to anybody who has some thoughts about that topic.
For me, I think giving up the possibility of marriage was a suffering. And it was a part of my vocational call, and I have done it willingly, and I have grown greatly for it. But I would say that that's probably the hardest thing I ever did in my life, was to say yes to God and to recognize I would not be a wife and mom.
How old were you when you made that decision?
17.
Wow. So it's quite young to mm-hmm. have to step so across such a big river and not
yes.
look back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, that's a huge thing to have to give up, and I can imagine that it did cause a lot of suffering.
And I was a terrible mama baby, so I was terribly, terribly homesick. I was lovesick and homesick in my early day, in my formation years. I don't regret it in any way, and I fully embrace it, but that was the reality. Actually, when Aquinas College, you know, when our college classes started and I could get in to study, finally the homesickness kind of lifted a little bit, and that was great, but... It was, you know, we didn't get to, in those days, you didn't go home for the first 3 or 4 years. You only saw your parents once a month, and it was difficult.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about how often you could see family. So once a month when you're mm-hmm. young, kind of mm-hmm. end of high school age is mm-hmm. not much. And yeah, mm-hmm. some of us, I think, you know, you don't know how you're going to react to being away from family yeah. until you're in that situation. It can be terribly painful.
I left 2 in high chairs when I left. I'm the oldest of 5, but my siblings are much younger than me. So Lynn was going on 3, and Don was going on 2, and then I had a sister 6 and a brother 11. So that was a lot of pull
yeah.
in leaving them behind.
And they must have really missed you as well. I can imagine that was hard all the way around. Ellie or Katie, any thoughts about something that's been hard that you've had to work through?
Yeah, I can start. This isn't as much an acute suffering as I feel it is more of a chronic issue in my life that I've experienced. What I mentioned about growing up away from extended family, I've always desired that deep network of relationships, that I would meet other people who had that, and I longed for it. And I find myself in a place now where I very much believe that true change comes from being committed and faithfully present in a place and committed to a community. And that can be certainly a virtual community possibly, but I really believe the physical presence matters. And that's a value I hold, and yet I live in a time where it's very common to be transient, and this is something we've talked about recently in our Sisters and Seekers Nuns and Nuns community here in Grand Rapids, is that millennials, especially those who are more socioeconomically privileged or educated, seem to struggle with commitment. We move for jobs or for education. We're less likely to get married than our parents were. And this is something I feel in myself, too. I'm right now considering moving to pursue a master's degree, which is very common of people in my my circles. Yet I feel that we often do it without a second thought of the place that we're leaving, or the community we're going to. If we know we're going to be in a certain place for only 2 years, we might be hesitant to commit and get involved in that space. So I think the question of how do you embody the value of community with these competing factors of pursuing a career or education, how do you live that out? And I think for more and more young people, we do have family members all over the country, or they are dispersed. So how do you feel that sense of home when there's no physical home to really go back to where your extended family might gather?
Thank you. Katie, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, I have a story of I think, more struggle than suffering, but this continuous struggle and journey I'm on of understanding my identity and who I am, particularly my spiritual or communal sort of sense of being. And I think that the place where this came into question with me most was when I was doing interfaith work, both in college and then after college. And the challenging thing with the interfaith work that I was a part of, or particularly some kind of manifestations of it, was the real sort of tendency to put people into boxes. And so, you know, there's on a panel, there's a Christian and a Jewish person and a Muslim representing the wholeness of that tradition. And especially as someone who, you know, I was raised something and then I've been exploring other practices, but now I don't really identify with anything, I didn't fit into any of the boxes that were put before me. And I think I kind of fell between the cracks of community. And it didn't feel like there was anyone there to catch me. And as I started connecting with more people, more young people in Grand Rapids who were organizers or activists or social workers or students, the story that was my own story, I just kept hearing over and over again that there were a lot of us that were really feeling like we weren't fitting into particular structures of community or affiliation that were left for us. And so the challenge for us was to create those structures that could hold us, which ended up, you know, I think being a really beautiful challenge because it encouraged us to not only find like-minded folks, but who could help hold us together, who could challenge us, and who could we be in community with in a way that could possibly transform us as well, which is, of course, how Nuns and Nuns and what became Sisters and Seekers came to be, is a place to catch the folks who were falling between the cracks of religious and spiritual traditions.
Yeah, and as you're saying it's such a beautiful organization that you've created, but I know you're talking about being kind of isolated and feeling lonely at times, and that's hard. It's great to find something on the other side. But yeah, that's a tough thing, I think, especially when you're younger and you're just out of college and you're maybe separated from family, trying to figure out whether you're in the right job, the right city, the right group of friends. So yeah, that it's a creative time in life, but it can be a really hard time in life. Well, it's been a great, great pleasure to talk with all three of you here today, Sister Barbara Hansen, Ellie Hutchinson, and Katie Gordon from the Nuns and Nuns Project. I also want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning into Your True North. Follow us on Facebook at Your True North Podcasts. Our producer is Sean O'Melia, and our editing and studio coordinator is Lauren Yentz. I'm your host, Cindy Camp. Please join us again for another conversation about values as a compass for life's journey.